the way to slice a light line. Though the pirates had joked about making me clean floors, they actually pulled over a box of parts for me, along with several containers of lubricant. They told me to grease each part and set them out on a cloth. This was good. They could have left me to feel sorry for myself, and there's no telling how long I would have indulged that. But when they plopped down the gears and made fun of me for getting caught, demanding I work, well, that made me angry. And anger considers defeatism to be easy prey. I did as they asked, but as soon as I'd gathered my wits and my determination, I quested out with my cytonic senses, searching for Chet. I found his mind relatively nearby. I thought maybe he'd made his way back onto the blue jungle fragment to hide if it hadn't drifted away already. "Chet," I said to his mind.
"Ah,"
he said, his voice laced with pain.
"Miss Nightshade, it is good to hear that you are well. I had feared the worst."
"You're hurt," I said.
"Merely a small wound," he said. "A destructor shot grazed me. Nothing an old hound like me hasn't felt a dozen times over. Ha!"
It was bravado. I could feel he was legitimately in pain, and it was my fault.
"Be careful," he warned me. "Talking this way could draw Delver attention."
That gave me pause. He was right. Yet I had an impression. Ever since that moment at the path, something had changed about my powers, or my understanding of them. I knew better how to hide. I closed my eyes and concentrated. When I reached out to someone like Chet, I could now see that I always did the cytonic equivalent of shouting. So I tried to focus, control my voice. I returned to Chet and brushed his mind with a soft whisper instead. "How is this?"
"Miss Nightshade," he said. "Why, that is marvelous. How did you learn to be so quiet?"
"I'm learning just now," I said. But then, I'd always had a talent for hearing the stars. And the night before, I'd been able to catch thoughts Braid hadn't wanted to share with me. "I think maybe you don't need to project your thoughts to me. Just think them while we're connected, and I will overhear them."
"Does this work?"
he asked, plainly trying to do as I asked. "It does," I said.
"Excellent. What is your situation then?"
"Captured," I said, "chained to the wall and greasing some parts for starship repair."
"Could be worse," Chet said. "What is the plan?"
"I haven't really gotten that far."
"Fair enough," Chet said. "But this need only be a minor setback. In fact, it could be for the best. We must find a way to visit the next location on the Path of Elders, which is deep within Broadsider territory. I had worried about them hunting us down once we stole a ship. It would be difficult to find time to indulge in a vision while under fire. But with you infiltrating their base, perhaps we can find a way to prevent that. Could you see if you can learn how they patrol their territory?"
There was a certain forced boisterousness to his words. Connected to him as I was now, I could see that more clearly than ever. He wasn't simply a bundle of endless optimism. He chose to speak this way deliberately. "You are in pain," I said to him. "I'm worried about you."
"Don't be. Just focus on getting us a ship. Ha! Those pirates have no idea what they've done by bringing you in among them, I must say."
I found myself smiling, and, well, he did have a point. I could use this. Being captured by pirates was exactly the kind of awesome thing that happened in the stories. It was merely another interesting challenge to overcome. Plus, I was inadvertently being given a chance to practice my cytonic skills. Except I couldn't gloss over how my mistake had landed us in this situation. I had to come clean. "Chet," I said, "I'm sorry. I messed all of this up."
"You mustn't blame yourself, Miss Nightshade," he replied. "Sometimes plans don't work out."
"Except," I said, "it was because of me. I changed the plan at the last minute, sneaking into a different hangar than we'd discussed."
"Why would you do that?"
he asked. "Because I didn't trust you, Chet. I thought you were going to betray me and steal my icon. I felt the immediate stab of pain those words caused him.
You did?
Chet said. I'm sorry, I said. I let my worries get the better of me. Scud, it hurt worse, feeling firsthand his sense of betrayal.
Why?
He asked.
Have I not endeavored to aid you in your entire quest? Have I not been a worthy traveling companion?
You have, I said. I'm sorry, Chet. This is my problem, not yours.
I see,
he sent back.
Yes, well, we must move forward. Let the past be the past, one might say. Yes.
Never had words sounded more forced to me. I could feel his anguish. Being trusted was important to him, for reasons I couldn't sort through. I could only feel what was on the surface, not his deeper thoughts.
Well, Chet said, I will recuperate here, I think. You soldier forward. Yes.
I wanted to apologize again. I wanted to explain the way I was hurt by Braid's betrayal, and the way I was realizing how bad I was at judging people. But he wanted to be left alone. I could feel that. I had to allow him that. I broke off the connection, feeling sick and worthless. Scud. So I threw myself into greasing the parts and kept an eye on the pirates, distracting myself from my shame by trying to learn what I could about them. Over the next few hours, I got a glimpse of what it took to keep a flight of starfighters in the air without a proper support infrastructure. Judging from the way they talked, they spent an incredible amount of time maintaining the spacecraft and figuring out how to make replacement parts out of salvage. I thought our settlement on Detritus had been ragtag, but we'd had the forges and manufactories. We'd had tens of thousands of people, and our entire society had been devoted to keeping a few hundred starfighters in combat. The Broadsiders didn't have any of that. From what I could tell, they were under 20 in number and flew 9 starfighters. By the time I was halfway through the stack of parts, I had recovered some self-respect and was focused on the problem at hand. Yes, I'd made a mistake. Yes, I'd hurt Chet. I needed to keep pressing forward, however. The best way to make it up to him was to steal a ship, then get us through Broadsider territory to the next stop on the Path of Elders. Right. First step, try to learn what I could of these pirates. This was an opportunity as much as it was a setback. I turned my attention to the rest of the parts and soon reached the last of them, a large gear. I set it onto the cloth with a clink. Hey, I called to the pirates. I'm finished. The human with the scraggly beard walked over, joined by the Varvax. I kept extra close attention on that one. They were the race who had kept my people enslaved, and I couldn't trust them. I could use some more work, I said to them. What do you want me to do next?
You want more work?
The human asked. Better than sitting around feeling sorry for myself, I said. After a shared look with the Varvax, the human dragged over one of the landing gear assemblies, with the wheels still attached.
You know how to strip this and re-lubricate it?
I nodded, fishing in the tool bin the Varvax had provided. I wasn't an expert in repairs or engineering. Rig had always been the one who knew that kind of stuff. But he'd taught me how to service Embot's original ship during our days rebuilding it. I could handle breaking down a landing gear assembly. The Varvax returned to her work. But as the human turned away, I asked, "So what's your story?" He paused, then squatted beside me, watching as I somewhat inexpertly disassembled the mechanism. Was he judging me for using the wrong socket wrench 3 separate times?
I'm not that interesting, he finally said. I've got the same question for you. How do you know how to do this? Your master really let you play with machinery?
My master?
You said you were a thief, he said. But before you escaped, you were a pet, right? Like me? A kept human? Or, no. Were you in one of the research labs?
Ah, right. He must have been a human like Braid. Some were kept as novelties around the superiority, like kings had kept lions back on old Earth. Fearsome creatures from another world turned into showpieces. I could imagine the civilized peoples of the superiority being delighted by the dangerous humans who had once tried to conquer the galaxy. I'm surprised they put you in here, I said. You must have been quite valuable as a curiosity.
Yeah, well, he said. It's all fun and games until your pet tries to steal the family starship and escape. Too aggressive, they decided. As if they hadn't known what I was when they brought me.
He held out a hand.
A Maxim.
Spin, I replied, taking it.
Don't feel too bad about being locked up, he said, gesturing to the light line. The Broadsiders are a good group. Show the captain you're not going to run the first chance you get, and you can work your way up like the rest of us. Hell, if you're as good with repairs as you seem, you'll be in charge of a ground crew before too long.
I looked at the mediocre work I'd been doing on the wheel housing. This was what passed for being good with repairs around here? What if I never get to where I won't run? I asked. He studied me.
You're new in the nowhere, aren't you? That other guy, your friend, he had a sense about him, like he knew what he was doing. Not you, though, eh?
I've only been in for, I tried to remember, for, scud, why was that so hard to remember? A week, I think?
Best not to stress about the time too much,
Maxim said.
Even in a group, it's difficult for us to keep track. I'm surprised you lasted as well as you did out there.
He patted me on the shoulder, then stood up.
That's why you won't run. You'll feel better here, more like yourself. You'll see.
He didn't seem to even consider it a possibility that I'd been carrying a reality icon, despite the ashes they'd found. Icons must really have been as rare as Chet said. Well, a plan of attack was forming. I could earn the trust of the pirates by working here a few days, all while learning how they patrolled their territory, like Chet suggested. I could also investigate the flight mechanisms for the various ships and pick out the easiest one to steal. Then, as soon as I felt the time was right, I could grab Embot, steal a ship, dig out the icon, and be on my way. Maybe with all that done, Chet would forgive me for being a complete jerkface.
Where did you learn mechanics so well?
Maxim asked.
And why would they throw you in here, if you're this talented?
I'm not as talented as you think. He smiled.
I know it's sometimes hard to open up. But if you tell about your old life, we can remind you about it, if you forget.
Scud. That happens? I said, making small talk. My mind was more focused on planning my escape than on what I was saying.
It's not as bad as it sounds, he said, especially if you have friends to help you remember.
Well, I wasn't thrown in here, I said, turning back to the wheel mechanism. I jumped in myself. Though, admittedly, I was being chased by a bunch of soldiers at the time.
Ha! Maxim said. They really should learn not to keep us as pets.
I almost told him I wasn't a pet, that I was from a human planetary enclave. He was so friendly, I wanted to trust him and explain that I was a soldier fighting the superiority. Yeah, that would be a bad idea if I wanted to steal a ship. Fortunately, I was slowly learning my lesson. Best not to tip off a captor to what I was planning. Of course, what if I was making a mistake by not trusting him? I'd been too suspicious of Chet, but not being suspicious enough of Braid had landed me in enormous trouble. Man, I was crap at judging people, wasn't I? At any rate, the best option seemed to be to remain quiet about my skills. Maxim left me and went over to chat with his Varvax friend, gesturing toward me periodically. The speed at which I did my work seemed to make them suspicious, and I realized that maybe I should have pretended to be more ignorant. Regardless, I needed to contact Embot. So I decided to mutter and talk to myself a lot as I worked. It felt like a good idea to demonstrate to the others that I was constantly chattering, even when nobody was around. That way, when I eventually talked to Embot's drone, it wouldn't look so odd. I kept stripping and lubricating the mechanism, trying to slow down for what had to have been another few hours, until eventually I felt a mind hesitantly pushing against mine.
"Chet?"
I asked.
"Indeed," he replied. "I would like to speak with you, but perhaps we should do it the quieter way you did before."
"Done," I said. "But Chet, I—"
"Please," he said, "if I might begin."
"Go ahead," I said, forcing myself to hold back another apology.
"I have been thinking a great deal about our earlier conversation," he said, "and I wanted to admit something to you. Your suspicion of me isn't entirely unfounded. I have been disingenuous, Miss Nightshade."
"In what way?" I asked.
"I am not everything I appear to be," he said. "It is difficult for me to admit, for me to explain. You see, I've told you I don't remember being Commander Spears. But it's worse than that. I have been in here so long that I've lost much of my identity. Not only memories, but personality as well. Everything I was crumbled away, like dirt before a persistent stream. As this happened, I grew frightened. It is a terrible thing to lose yourself, and I had to replace it with something. And I remembered stories, fanciful stories perhaps, but full of men I'd admired.
Alan Quatermain, Lord John Roxton, Chet Cannister.
As I lost myself, I filled in the gaps, you see. The line between the hero adventurer and me blurred. And so, you are right to be suspicious. You perhaps thought me a liar, and in a way I am. Because I could not show you my true self. I've forgotten him."
"Chet," I said, "that doesn't make you a liar."
"Perhaps not," he replied. "But the truth is difficult to bear. I am not really a man, Miss Nightshade. I'm a collection of stories stuffed into a brain with no context, trying so very hard to simply keep going."
"You're a hero," I said.
"If that were true," he replied, "then I'd have confronted the truths in the Path of Elders long ago. They frighten me, Miss Nightshade. Spensa, they frighten me. For reasons I can't explain, because I don't quite remember. I think part of me is hidden in them somewhere, something that terrifies me. If I were a true hero, I would have walked that road on my own long ago."
I didn't know what to make of that. I could feel his sincerity and his fear, even his confusion. "It doesn't matter where it came from," I said firmly. "You rescued me, guided me, helped me. And now you're walking this path with me."
"All for a fee," he said. "You noticed how I look upon your icon.
I see now why you treated me as you did."
I felt another spike of shame, mirrored by his own.
"We are quite a pair, aren't we?"
he sent.
"I hope that being near an icon will help me become more solid. That the reality ashes and the tie back to the somewhere will help me somehow. I cannot entirely blame you for worrying about my intentions."
"My distrust hurt you, though," I said. "Still hurts you."
"Yes,"
he admitted.
"It's in the persona, you understand. I must see myself as a hero, the gentleman explorer, beloved and trusted. Because if I'm not that, well then, that is all I have left of what I once was. Those dreams, those aspirations."
It was a strikingly candid moment where I could feel him exposed, frightened. Scud. I didn't deserve his confession, but in that moment, I knew I could trust him. The face he showed might have been a patchwork creation of his memories of stories, but the heart inside, that was good, solid. I tried to project this to him, and it worked. He perked up, and in a moment of wordless communication, he accepted my apology. We would continue forward. We would walk the path of elders, and we would find the secrets. I broke off the communication, then aggressively attacked the last of my work on the landing gear. I probably should have been tired, but I wasn't, nor was I thirsty. In fact, I had no idea how long I'd been working. I couldn't use my fatigue or even hunger as a way to judge the passage of time. In here, I often felt like I could just keep going. Forever. That was dangerous. I was going to have to keep a close eye on myself. Chapter 19. A few days later, I felt I was finally getting a handle on the Broadsiders as a group.
"Yeah, there are 6 pirate factions," Maxim had explained as we went through some booster maintenance on my second day as a captive. "We Broadsiders are smaller than we used to be, but we're one of the first and most proud."
"And the superiority?" I'd asked. "Several of these starfighters are their models."
"Ha! Yeah. The poor drips that run the mining operation at Shorehold ask for ships to protect themselves from us, which gives us plenty of opportunities to steal them."
Over the next 2 days, I subtly picked out more information. The factions had been disorganized until a few years ago, more very small roving bands or straggling refugees. The organization into factions had come as they solidified into the current 6. They spent most of their time trying to steal from the mining base, capturing new people who were exiled or even raiding one another. Over the days, as I watched, the Broadsiders curiously didn't lose a single one of their 9 ships in battle, though they went on a couple of raids. So maybe these were quick encounters, more about posturing than actual fighting. Of all the Broadsiders, I found Peg the most interesting. There was something different about the large alien. She was a Tenasai, a race that I'd learned on Starsight was often used to pilot drones or do other fighting in the superiority. She certainly had a dominating presence, and she watched me carefully whenever she was near. Other than her, 4 people commonly worked in our hangar. Maxim was one. The hangar I'd broken into had actually been his, though he'd been spending his guard duty hanging out with another flight. His flight was named Cutlass Flight, again, borrowing old Earth terms because the pirates found them intimidating. I had essentially been assigned to this flight myself, as I was under their supervision. The Varvax in our flight was named Naluba, a female of their species. She still made me nervous. I couldn't look at her without seeing Whimsic, as her exoskeleton was the same color green. Together, she and Maxim made up the ground crew for Cutlass Flight, which currently had only 2 active starfighters, plus Peg's shuttle, which she was very proud of, but which I wouldn't want to fight in. There was also one ship that wasn't combat ready yet, an old civilian vessel the team was modifying to be battle-worthy. It, like the shuttle, had a light lance for towing. Though the superiority didn't commonly use those for battle, they had them for industrial purposes. Now the team was installing destructors. As I did reconnaissance over the next few days, I decided that was the ship I was going to have to steal. Peg's shuttle had an unfamiliar control scheme, and the 2 more combat-ready ships, well, they were occupied by Cutlass Flight's 2 starfighter pilots. Both were of a crystalline species who literally inhabited their ships. As I was asking about their battle skill, Maxim dropped a really important piece of intel.
"It is nice to have 2 pilots who live in their cockpits," he said, wagging a wrench toward the ships. "As soon as the scanner tells us a raid is coming, they're ready."
Scanner? The Broadsiders had a long-range scanner? I'd assumed they'd have smaller proximity sensors like on starfighters, but a full-blown, long-range piece of surveillance equipment, that came as a surprise. I immediately started nosing about. The scanner's display was in our hangar, it turned out, and it was attached to some equipment up on the roof. It tracked ships and kept a detailed map of the region. Later that day, I managed to catch a look at the screen while the full map was up, showing me a more detailed version of what Chet had once drawn out for me. The Broadsider territory was a wedge of the belt tapering inward, bordered by other pirate factions on either side. All of their territory ended at Superiority territory, a wide band that dominated the middle of the belt in this region. Excited, I sent word to Chet that night. "There's a scanner," I explained, "a big one that watches for incoming ships. It can scan all the way to the Superiority's region of space, though I don't think it can spot individual people. It doesn't have enough resolution for that."
"That's more than I thought they'd have," he said. "They mostly scrounge for technology." "I wonder where they acquired a high-powered scanner."
"No idea," I said. "But it's a good thing I got captured, because..."
"Because with that scanner, they'd be able to track any ship we stole all the way to the next step in the path," Chet said. "Scrud. We'd never have managed to investigate the portal. They'd have been able to chase us all over the region. I am glad we found this out, though if offered the chance, I'd have chosen a route to this information that didn't involve my shoulder being baked like brisket."
He'd been spending the days convalescing, by his terms. I still felt bad about the destructor shot. "Anyway," I said, "this gives us an opportunity. I will need to sabotage that scanner before I go."
"Ha! Don't enjoy yourself too much, Spensa. You'll make me feel left out. What is the next step in our plan, then?"
I turned over in my bed, a mattress and blanket in the hangar where I was tethered to the wall. They'd been giving me more slack lately on that, but I was still locked into place for now. "Next step," I said, "is to contact M'Bot. I'll need to upload him to steal the ship."
"Excellent," Chet said. "Give my best to the AI.
"I appreciate you trying to think of him that way."
"If I have been misjudged," Chet said, "then I too may misjudge. I don't think it wise to keep an AI near, but that is a gut instinctual reaction. I should instead accept your word on his character. Perhaps if I'd done that sooner, I would not have given you cause to mistrust me."
I winced, like I always did when Chet felt pain during our communications. "Regardless," I said, "I have a plan for contacting M'Bot. I just need to find a starship part that's in bad disrepair." Once our conversation was done, I began to drift off to sleep, then stopped myself before fully going out. I tried to contact Jorgen, but something prevented me. A kind of odd mist hovered around me, blocking my attempts. I wasn't certain what to make of it yet. I'd seen this on other nights recently, hadn't I? The next morning, Maxime clapped his hands and ceremoniously unhooked my light line, then turned it off.
"You've earned a little more slack. Peg's orders."
He leaned in.
"Don't hang yourself if you can help it."
I felt at my neck. My natural instinct was to bolt. I fought that down. "Thanks," I said, standing up and stretching. Only 4, no, it had been 5, hadn't it? Days with the Broadsiders, and I had already gained this much trust. This was going great.
"We've got some gears to grease,"
Maxime said. "No more gears, please," I replied. "I feel the need to make myself extra useful, to prove myself to Peg. Tell me, what's the most brokenest thing you have in here?"
"Don't know about that,"
Maxime said, but gestured toward one of the fighter ships.
"But Shiver's left destructor has been acting up. If you could somehow fix it."
I nodded and went to check in with Naluba, who had an office area at the rear of the hangar. She authorized all work, and soon I found myself under the wing of the starfighter, prodding at the defective destructor. Black gunk was leaking out of one of the seams, and the entire thing smelled terrible. I said, "How long since you've serviced this thing?" A large blue crystal, shaped like a prism, sat on a stool beside me. A crust of smaller crystals held it in place, and a line of the same crystals ran across the floor and up the wheel and side of the starfighter into the cockpit. The larger crystal nearest me vibrated with a reverberating tone. I would never have recognized it as a language. It sounded one step away from the noise an engine made when close to locking up. but my pin knew better than I did and translated the peels into words.
It has been months, the crystal admitted, maybe longer. Time is so hard to track in here.
Months or more? I said, incredulous. Destructors should be serviced every week.
We thought it unwise to open the housing, considering the damage to it, the crystal said. We thought it might break and not be fixable.
Prevention is always better than repair, I said.
Wise words, the crystal replied, but accurate only as long as you have access to preventative measures.
The crystal was an alien creature known as a resonant. This one, whose name in English was Shiver, had told me she was female this time. Their entire bodies were made of crystal that could grow at will. She'd filled the inside of the starfighter cockpit much as minerals fill a geode. The part I was talking to now, the larger gemstone, had grown rapidly as I'd come over to inspect the machine. I imagined this part was like an arm or something, a limb Shiver could extend for interaction. The large crystal at the end didn't seem necessary. I had the sense she created it to give others something to address when speaking to her. My attempt to steal a ship had been doomed from the start. I'd chosen a vehicle where the electronics and controls were grown over by Shiver's body. Normally, a resonant would remain in one place for an entire incarnation, which I gathered lasted some 50 years or so. This time, she had grown herself through the starship, almost coming to inhabit it as an AI might, or actually, like a figment. Hey, Shiver, I said, as I unscrewed the housing on the destructor to get a look at the guts. You ever heard of a species known as figments?
Indeed, I have, Shiver said. Such strange and mysterious individuals. I've never met one, but I've always been fascinated by them.
I was thinking they're kind of like your species, I said.
In what way?
Well, you both kind of inhabit a spaceship, like, I don't know, a soul in a body.
That's a fascinating perspective.
The way those words sounded made me think of how Kimmelin would reply, "Bless your stars," to some stupid comment I'd made. I feel like you disagree with me, I said.
Though I find some holes in your logic, I'm certain I'll understand better after considering your opinion.
I'd nearly forgotten how conciliatory people from the Superiority could be. Here was a literal group of pirates that had caught me trying to steal from them, and they had treated me almost like a houseguest, a chained-up one, but still. You can tell me if I said something dumb, I said as I worked on the housing screws. I'm not going to be offended.
It's not really our way.
You're a starfighter pilot, I said. You fly out there weekly to fight. You can't argue with me a little?
Spin, my species evolved as motionless individuals who would spend decades next to one another. It's not in our nature to argue. Unlike motile species, we cannot simply walk away if we make one another angry.
Huh. Yeah, that made sense.
But, Shiver said, in the name of broadening both of our understandings, let me explain. You imply that I am like a figment by the way we both control a ship. I find this a superficial observation, as it makes us similar in the same way any two species who use appendages to move controls would be similar, no matter how different their cultures, bodies, and core chemical makeups might be.
Yeah, I can see that, I said. Honestly, I might just be missing my friends.
I can understand, Shiver said. I also miss my 7 mates from my cavern. I grew to be part of them for 3 incarnations. And now, I doubted a crystalline creature could cry. But the peal that came next was reminiscent of it, and the pin didn't interpret the sounds as words.
Hey, I said, finally getting the last stubborn screw out. We'll find a way out of here someday.
Of course we will, Shiver said. Of course we will.
Those words also had the same feel of something Kimmelin would say. The two would get along fantastically,
At least, both seemed pretty good at handling me. I pried off the destructor's outer housing, then wrinkled my nose. The weapon clearly had a leak in its mechanisms. Fluid had been seeping out for some time. Then firing the weapon had heated it up and charred it all, resulting in a heavily corroded mechanism full of flaky black ash. This is perfect, I thought, careful not to show my excitement. I'd wanted something broken, but something that was broken and needed cleaning was even better. Out loud, I said, "Scud, this is a mess."
"I resonate that," Shiver said, "and felt it might be so."
"This is going to take a while to clean up," I said. "I'll pull it off the ship for now, so you'll be missing a destructor if you have to fly."
"Unfortunately, the nature of our existence often requires flying in suboptimal conditions," Shiver said. "I wish you speed and self-fulfillment as you work on your repairs, Spin."
"Thanks," I said. I affixed a small portable acclivity ring to the bottom of the mechanism, then began unhooking it from the wing. That took about a half hour, but once I was done, I lowered it with a remote control. The destructor was a good meter and a half long, shaped kind of like a missile, and with the housing removed, it was all exposed wires and char. As I hovered it along, I got a glimpse out the back door. And it took extreme self-control to not immediately run out and dig up my father's pin. I knew it would be safe out there, though, much safer than in my possession. I hovered the unmounted destructor over to Naluba's desk, where she was cataloging salvage. The Varvax liked to keep track of things like that, which I found suspicious. Who became a pirate to do paperwork? "It's not looking good for this, Naluba," I said, gesturing to the destructor. "I won't even be able to tell how much is fixable until after I've cleaned it off, and that alone could take weeks of effort."
"My, my," Naluba said,
standing from her desk and inspecting the destructor. Like others of her kind, she made wide gestures with the hands of her suit as she spoke, the sound being projected out through the sides of the exoskeleton's head.
"We don't have a replacement. I already have four other faulty destructors. Spin the captive. There's no way you could speed up this repair?"
"You're kidding, right?" I said, gesturing to the destructor. Naluba sighed. "I suppose," I said, pretending to think about it, "my old cleaning bot could work faster. Don't know where you put it, though." As soon as I said it, I found the attempt awkward. The Varvax were such a crafty species. Surely Naluba would immediately see through what I was doing.
"Oh," she said, "that's a good idea. Here, let me get it for you."
I felt an immediate spike of alarm. That had been too easy, hadn't it? Yet the Varvax wandered off, then less than a minute later returned to the hangar, Embot's drone floating alongside her. I cautiously guided the destructor over to a workbench near the corner. Naluba left the drone with me and returned to her work as if nothing unusual were happening. However, as I looked Embot over, I was pretty sure I caught Naluba watching me. So, this was a test of some sort, maybe? That made sense. The broadsiders had probably been expecting me to ask to use the drone. Still, it seemed odd they'd allow it after such a short time of us working together. Maybe they'd placed a bug of some sort on him. Would trying to talk to him alert them? "They don't think he's an AI," I reminded myself. "They think he's just some kind of spy bot." Regardless, I had to take the chance. I knelt and opened the side of the drone where the controls were and acted like I was engaging some programs. Then I whispered, "Hey, you should know," he whispered back. "They've installed some very basic monitoring software on me." "That's actually a relief," I whispered. "I worried it was too easy to get them to let me work with you. I assume you can deal with the software?" "Obviously," he said. "I'm trying not to be too offended by the AI scrubbing they tried to do. It's basically the equivalent of feeding me poison. Fortunately, in this case, that feeding involved a comically large spoon and a big sign that said, 'Not poison,'
I was able to circumvent it with ease, but as one might say, it's the thought that counts.
Right then, I said. I need you to make it appear as though I used a code to access some of your hidden programming. Then spoof it so they think I set you to monitor and record what is said nearby. That will give them something to find that isn't too suspicious. After that, make it seem like I activated your deep cleaning and repair protocol.
Great, he said. What deep cleaning and repair protocol?
The drone's original.
Oh, we deleted that, didn't we? What you didn't delete, I did when uploading myself,
Embot whispered.
I wasn't about to keep cleaning protocols when I barely had room for myself, my mushroom databases, my backup mushroom databases, and my backups to the backups.
Well, start pretending to clean alongside me, and at least spoof the existence of some cleaning programs. I told them it would take weeks to fix this destructor without your help, but I honestly have no idea. I was just looking for an excuse. He complied, and the two of us set to work. Fortunately, he quickly identified the burned compound and suggested a specific kind of solvent for cleaning it. Even though he didn't have his cleaning routines, his chemistry database proved extremely helpful, which was good, since the truth was that I had no idea how to repair a broken destructor that went far beyond the basic maintenance rig had taught me. I kept us to the corner and chattered away, mostly talking to myself, keeping up my act. When nobody else was close, Embot could respond. He did have in his databases plenty of detailed starship schematics, so as we removed more of the black gunk, he could point out the problems with the machine, the multiple serious problems.
I feel like I should be offended by proxy for this gun, Embot said. Continuing to fire this was the machine equivalent of,
of forcing your poor warhorse to keep galloping after it has thrown a shoe and taken an arrow in the flank? I asked.
Good metaphor, he said.
Thanks, I said. I was lying on the ground, delicately trying to get some of the gunk off without ripping out a set of coolant hoses. It's really good to hear your voice, Embot. Sorry I got us captured.
Well, I did find some interesting molds in the other hangar. They're basically diet mushrooms, so that part was pleasant. What happened to Chet?
Got wounded, I said, but escaped. I can talk to him with cytonics. He's recovering, and will be glad to hear that you and I have made contact.
Are you certain? He said. He still thinks I'm an abomination.
He's getting better about that.
Maybe he shouldn't be, Embot said.
He already kept his voice very soft when talking to me, but something seemed even more hushed about this question.
The way the pirates checked to make sure there wasn't an AI in me, going so far as to inject scrubbing software, indicates Chet might be right. What if I am an abomination?
People think humans are abominations too, I said, getting a big chunk of the gunk free. They consider that as verifiable as military protocol or personnel records, but it's flat out wrong.
The rumors about AIs must have started somewhere.
Sure, I said, like the rumors about humans. I mean, we apparently tried to conquer the galaxy 3 times. Doesn't mean we're monsters, just inefficient tyrants. It was growing increasingly difficult to reconcile what my ancestors had done with the stories Gran-Gran told me. It was easy to think of yourself as the hero when you were fighting back against a vengeful enemy bent on extermination. But what about when you were the ones conquering? How many people like Morimer, ordinary Dions trying to prove themselves, had died in the wars my people had started? It made me uncomfortable. I quoted Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan because when faced with annihilation, we needed that kind of courage. Yet both of those men, confirmed by Embot's databases, had been mass murderers on a terrible scale. My life had been so much simpler when I'd been fighting the nebulous Krell and not real people.
Spensa, Embot said, hovering in close. Thank you for continuing to be my friend. despite the potential danger.
Thank you in return, I said. I mean, think about it realistically. If one of the two of us is going to end up being responsible for the other's death, who's it going to be? The fiddly little robot who loves mushrooms? Or the meter and a half tall terror who once tried to get her best friend to agree to be scalped so she could put her first notch on her toy hatchet?
Oh dear, Embot said.
In my defense, I said, Gran-Gran didn't explain well. So I thought scalping someone meant cutting their hair real short, but while using a sword or an axe. It sounded pretty cool. Embot fell silent as Niluba came walking by with a tablet, tapping away. I muttered to myself, talking as if to the black gunk while Embot sprayed solvent. Eventually, he spoke again, very quietly.
Spencer, something is odd about this destructor.
Other than the fact that it seems to have been fossilized in a tar pit?
Other than that, yes. Those two boxes installed on the sides of the weapon? They're output modifiers. Normally, you'd use something like that to increase the heat of a weapon for, say, cutting through metal shielding, or maybe to modify it to lower shot intensity for training.
And what do these do?
There's no way to tell, Embot said. They've been completely fried by the overuse.
But haven't you noticed how the broadsiders have never lost a ship?
I've noticed, I said. But maybe the broadsiders are just lucky. They've only been out on a couple of sorties since we arrived here.
I suppose that's true.
Huh.
What? I asked.
I just counted the number of sorties I've observed. I came up with 10.
Impossible. I said, 10 fights in 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, strange.
Oh.
Oh?
I just reconciled my internal chronometer, he said.
We've been with the broadsiders for nearly 2 weeks, Spencer.
My cleaning rag dropped from my fingers. I blinked, trying to remember. How many times had I slept? It kind of blurred together.
Scud, I said. How did you not notice?
I have no idea, he said, his voice small.
I guess I'm more alive than I thought, and am experiencing some of the same effects you are. Indeed, a lack of time awareness would seem to fit with what we know of Delvers.
Well, that would explain why the others trusted me with Embot so soon. It wasn't soon. Nevertheless, my brain struggled to make sense of it. With an effort that felt almost painful, I thought back over the repairs I'd done. Stripping down the landing gear on all 4 ships, doing booster maintenance, light wing repairs. I immediately reached out to Chet.
Have you contacted the AI?
He asked. Yes, but Chet, how many days do you think I've been in here, captured?
6,
he guessed.
I've been sleeping off my wound a lot, though, so maybe 7 or 8.
14, I said. He was silent for a moment. Then I felt the emotional equivalence of a sigh.
It is dangerous to stay in one place long, he said. This happens, Spencer. I'm sorry.
Can you set alarms? I asked Embot. Calendar alerts? We should start aggressively acknowledging each day. See if we can remain more focused.
Yes, yes, that's a good idea.
I sensed worry in his voice, though. Even if Chet expected this sort of thing, I felt it incredibly strange that it affected Embot. I did remember sleeping, but found I couldn't count the times I'd done it. This place played havoc with my sense of time in such a way as to make it really difficult. 2 weeks? A lot could change in a war during that time. Were my friends all right? I needed to accelerate my plans for escaping. I had to find a way to upload Embot's mind into one of the starfighters. Preferably one without a crystalline alien occupying it.
Chapter 20.
I'll be honest, Maxime said, lounging across the sawhorse, a wrench dangling from one finger.
I always thought something was wrong with me. I was taught about how mean and naturally angry humans were. Yet I didn't feel any of that, you know? Well, my owners presumed their training kept me under control. They had this whole therapy process, they said, cured aggression, and so were able to get the permits for a human child. They got me when I was 9 and had me sit around and hum.
I looked up from my diagnostic screen, where I'd been quietly preparing to advance the next step of our plan. Peg had mentioned that the base scanner needed some maintenance. I wasn't certain when that would happen, but I wanted to be ready to go when it did. For the time being, I was doing my best to fit in, and I had to admit I enjoyed chatting with the others. They had you hum? Like, you know, I made a humming noise.
Exactly, Maxime said. They'd have me sit on a little mat and just hum for hours at a time. They said it was a special proprietary process. I guess it was the tone I was humming that made it distinctive. Still not sure, honestly, though they had me at it for 20 years.
Anti-aggression therapy is big business, Spin, Naluba said from where she sat on the floor nearby, poring over some spreadsheets. Many parents are terrified that their child might be too aggressive. They'll pay big for treatment, any treatment.
It is a failing, Shiver said, her crystal letting out peels from where it had grown on a box nearby. Though the humming treatment sounds unusual, there are more reasonable therapies available. I think many people in the superiority are working hard to create a better society, but some of us question if our goals are worthy. The entire system vibrates with an unsteady tone. It cracks itself with such sounds. We are too polite sometimes to accept this.
Maxime nodded. The beard made him look older than the early 30s he actually was. I'd always imagined that a long, rugged beard would make a man seem like a warrior. Maxime disabused me of that image. He looked a lot less like a warrior than he did like a guy who'd been lost wandering the caverns. His relaxed manner, though, made me curious. I'd assumed all captive humans would be intense, like Braid. Yet this guy was so laid back. He could have gotten into a napping contest with someone I used to know. With Ned. That was it. How had I forgotten Ned's name? Maxime could have gotten into a napping contest with Ned and held his own.
I learned to act real fearsome, Maxime said, grinning. I'd growl and show my teeth and even wave my hands and say, Boingar, Boingar. I told them it was my clan's battle cry. My parents would have found that funny. We didn't have a clan, only a little family, trying to live as normal a life as we could in a research lab.
He glanced away then, like he often did when he mentioned his parents. He'd been denied contact with them after being sold to the pair of Varvax. Now he couldn't remember their faces. Few of the pirates had been in here long enough to forget their pasts entirely, and many had been in a group the entire time, slowing the process. But from what I'd been able to gather, the effects were showing regardless.
The superiority failed you, Maxime, Naluba said. Shiver is right, though I will say it more strongly than she. It failed you, as it has failed so many.
I'd been keeping an extra close eye on Naluba. She looked imposing in her shell-like exoskeleton. Did she realize I was plotting my escape? Was she watching me like I watched her? What about you? I asked her, trying to sound nonchalant. Did the superiority fail you as well?
In a way, she said, the faceplate of her exoskeleton revealing the small, crab-like creature that was her true shape. Or I failed it. I was a bureaucrat.
In the government, I assume? I didn't really know how other nations did things. How high were you?
High?
She waved her arms, seeming amused.
Everyone always assumes that we Varvax are in charge and must be so important. I assure you we're not.
My, Some are, spin of the humans, but not me. I was stationed in an irrelevant department of an oft-ignored utility. I lived on Tuma.
I hadn't known that, Maxim said. Wow.
Tuma? I asked.
Prone to acidic rainstorms, Maxim explained, but near some nice resource farms. Mostly automated. Cheap place to live. Very cheap.
Well, Naluba said, I did customer analysis for the methane utility farms. I had a lot of information, including population statistics from many planets, so I could judge trends in customer usage. Spent too much time with that data, maybe. She turned away then, lowering her arms. The exoskeleton mimicked the way her smaller crab body moved inside. I started asking questions. Too many questions. I was thrown in here almost before I knew what had happened. I frowned to myself, turning back to my work. What was Naluba hiding? Varvax still baffled me. For example, I'd recently discovered that the fluid-filled inorganic exoskeletons weren't straight technology, but were somehow grown and hooked directly into the Varvax's nervous system. How did that work?
We in the superiority failed so many, Shiver said. Often you grow so large, so comfortable, that you feel the cavern must be right, because it is what has been. You're used to it, and it's right, so everyone else must be right as well. You resonate with self-assurance, ignoring the shifting rocks that might someday lead the cavern to collapse, crushing every crystal who lives there.
The others nodded. I continued my diagnostic. I was working on the fourth starship, the former civilian craft that we'd been adding weapons to. Today, my job was to make sure the starship's onboard targeting systems, which we'd just installed, were functioning correctly. All things considered, my plan to steal it was going well. M-Bot and I had been good at firmly counting the passage of time for the last 2 days, so I felt more in control. More determined, focused. The toughest part was feeling like I was leading on the members of Cutlass Flight. Maxim, Shiver, Naluba, even the quiet Dliz, the other resonant in the team. She rarely spoke, though she'd also grown a crystal near where we were working and would occasionally make it vibrate in tune with what one of us was saying, a form of approval or agreement, I thought. A part of me naturally wanted to see this as my new family, to make a home among the people of Cutlass Flight as I had with my other companions in arms. But I couldn't afford to bond to this group as I had to Hesho, Morimer, and Vapor. Fortunately, I recognized this impulse and could resist with a little tactical cynicism. Remember that they locked you up, I told myself. Remember that they're a bunch of pirates, not a true military. Theoretically, once we finished with our diagnostics, this ship would be ready to go into combat. Maxim was to be its pilot, and I would be his ground crew. So when you fly, I said to him, it will be to fight other pirate factions?
Mostly, Maxim said, until we raid the superiority. Peg keeps talking about a large-scale offensive against them, though they're pretty well outfitted with fighters.
We have an advantage, though, Shiver noted, something none of the other factions have. Peg and her history.
This was new. I tried to show the proper amount of curiosity, but not seem too eager. Peg had a secret? Maybe with a few days of work, I could persuade them to.
Oh, right, Maxim said. You don't know, do you, Spin? Peg was a superiority officer, head of base security at the mining station.
Or maybe they'd just tell me. Head of base security, I said. That sounds important.
It was, Maxim said. She was second in command of the entire Sherhold base, so she knows tons about the installation, their fighting protocol, and all that.
And she threw it away to become a pirate? I asked.
More they forced her away, Maxim said.
It's politics, Spin, Naluba explained. Peg's one of the few people in here, pirate or worker, who came completely by choice. She took the job because it would advance her career. No one else was willing. Most everyone in here is a dissident, like Maxime or me. Even the workers don't come by choice. They aren't fully exiles, though, right, Shiver?
I was a large machinery operator, Shiver told me, her crystal vibrating, at the Sherhold mines. I was sent in here because of an accident back home that was technically my responsibility. They tell us if we work 10 years in the nowhere faithfully, we'll be allowed to leave. But that rarely happens.
So they have a portal? I asked. To the outside?
Yes, Shiver said. Right inside the base, but movement in or out is rigidly controlled.
So that was a potential way out after I finished following the Path of Elders, though I didn't fancy my chances of getting to it. Sneaking into a superiority base and somehow slipping through their tightly controlled portal seemed a poor option.
People are rarely let out despite their 10 years being up? I asked Shiver.
The officials find excuses, Naluba said softly. Reasons to keep back the workers, forbid them from leaving.
I was deemed too aggressive on my performance reviews, Shiver said. Not Peg's fault, mind you. She always turned in excellent reviews for everyone. There were others who made sure that the more talented workers remained behind.
And they did the same to Peg? I asked, looking around the hangar. She'd been nearby a short time ago, or had that been an hour or two? Scud.
Well, Shiver said, first time she re-upped on her contract willingly. I think she wanted to stay and help the workers get out. But then after 20 years in here, she decided she wanted to go. They kept their contract with her. This would be 3 years ago, I think. It was time to leave, and...
And what? I asked.
They said that she could go, Naluba explained, but that her children had to stay behind.
Wait, Peg had children?
They weren't part of the deal, you see, Shiver said. The superiority said they had to stay 10 years and work, as they were both young adults before they could leave. Didn't go well. Peg's shouting still resonates with me today.
Scud, I whispered. She seems like a bad person to betray.
You could say that, Shiver said. She stole a bunch of ships, persuaded a good 30 of us to follow her, and broke off to join the pirates. Factions formed because of her influence. She had this grand plan of uniting them against the superiority, take the entire base and hold it.
Now that caught my attention. That sounds awesome. We should be attacking them.
Tried and failed, Shiver said. We weren't good enough pilots. Superiority beat us bloody. Nowadays, no one will listen to Peg. Factions are broken, squabbling. It's hard enough to survive.
I'm going to get good, Maxime said. Learn to fly. I'll become the pirate champion, and the broadsiders will have respect again.
Wait, I said, my eyes widening. There's a pirate champion?
Yeah, we came up with it a couple years back, Naluba said, as she went over her spreadsheets for like the fourth time. There must be a best pilot among all the factions, so why not find out who it is? We hold matches now and then, one-on-one, in a starfighter. Keeps things interesting.
A pirate champion. For me to fight in a duel. Oh, stars. That was beautiful. No, no, I thought. No dueling. You are going to focus on the Path of Elders. But pirate champion.
I'll beat them, Maxime explained, if Shiver doesn't do it first. You're getting really good at flying, you know.
I resonate with this, Shiver said, and appreciate the compliment. You are skilled at those, Maxime.
Thanks, he said, then leaned toward me.
Shiver and I have been hatching this for a while. Current champion is one of Peg's sons. Both of them broke off to form their own factions back after everyone failed to beat the superiority. They won't listen to a word Peg says, but maybe if we take them down a notch, that will change.
It was hard to resist the idea of becoming pirate champion, but I had to focus. I abruptly unplugged the diagnostic tool from the front jack of the ship I'd been working on. Targeting systems still need recalibration, I said with a sigh, and showed the screen to Naluba.
Bother, the Varvak said. I thought you ran it through already.
Twice, I said. Programming must be conflicting with some of the onboard protocols. I'll need to do a wipe and re-upload the tech.
Run a separate diagnostic from another machine, too, she suggested. Might be this device that has the problem.
Good thought, I said, then jogged over to where Embot's drone was polishing the newly repaired destructor we'd been working on. I grabbed him.
You ready? I whispered.
Yes, he said. Did you find out when the sensor array is going to go down?
No, I said, but we have our chance now for the upload. I think we should take it.
Understood.
I sent word to Chet. Operation Third Time's the Charm is a go,